Valentia might never have approached Coruscant's polish and sophistication, but it had been a vibrant, bustling city. Now the entire place seemed more crowded and emptier at the same time. Ramshackle makeshift shanties had been built next to the older, stone-carved buildings. These clearly served as housing for itinerant workers, who had come out of the mountains looking for new opportunities that never materialized. Or had these people been forced out? Thane wasn't sure. He could tell from the clothes they wore that both Valley Kindred and Second Wavers were among the new vagabond population. Yet the two groups were harder to tell apart than they'd been before. Both the brilliant silks and plain homespun cloth had begun to be replaced by cheap, mass-produced garments. A dense, stultifying sameness had settled over the land. Even the entertainment was affected. Thane's rented room stood on the higher floor of a building that also housed a cantina at ground level. When he was a boy, his father had sometimes taken him into such establishments, promising to have just one drink. So Thane had spent many long hours sitting in a far corner watching pod races or the Spice World hollows he enjoyed so much. The cantinas were rougher now. Less neighborhood pub, more seedy bar. Most of the patrons were not local characters. Outworlders seemed to have crowded them out. As Thane nursed his ale, he stared at the screens in disbelief. Every single program was Imperial propaganda of some kind or another, a documentary ostensibly about the Empire's successful building programs on Thurhana Minor. Really, enormous power facilities that squatted over once pretty countryside was broken up by recruiting calls for stormtroopers, discover adventure and serve your empire, or news items about Emperor Palpatine receiving guests as he smiled and nodded. Worst of all was an ad for a special report scheduled to air soon, in which the full extent of the treasonous acts of sedition on the planet Alderaan will finally be exposed. Thane had thought everyone would be talking about Alderaan. No one did. The silence about an entire core world planet's destruction told Thane more than any gossip would have. Everyone is thinking about it. Everyone is afraid. If the Empire would destroy a world as important and prosperous as Alderaan, no place in the galaxy was safe. The Imperial broadcasts were vague about the Death Star's destruction, speaking only of an unprecedented attack by the Rebel Alliance. Thane had first thought the Empire would play it up as a rebel atrocity, but then he realized that it was more important for the populace to believe that the Empire could destroy another world at any moment. When he walked outside, he was disturbed even by the color of the sky. Jellicant's atmosphere usually showed itself as more gray than blue, but the air had always been clear and sparkling, and the gray overhead had the sheen of a fine mineral. Now the skies were darker, even when they were cloudless, as if expecting a storm that never came. Had the mining begun to affect the atmosphere? Thane had argued with himself about whether or not to contact his family when he arrived. Little as his father cared for him, and as much as his mother wanted to curry favor with the Empire, he couldn't believe they'd actually turn him in. Even if they wouldn't have protected him, they wouldn't have wanted to endure the shame. At home, he could have saved his credits, taken his time, and waited for Sienna. He could even have ridden his old line down to the fortress, tidied it up, made it nice. It seemed so right to meet her there again. In the end, though, Thane had decided against contacting his parents. He had no need for his father's drunken contempt or his mother's outrage. Least of all did he want to hear them talking about how Dalvin was doing. Given the shortage of Imperial troops, even an oaf like Dalvin had probably received a promotion. He'd be fool enough to take pride in it, too. But as the days went on, his spirits sunk lower. Sienna still hadn't appeared. What if she'd tried to desert but been captured? The thought of her in jail, feeling shamed and hopeless, sickened him. He didn't give in to despair. Sienna was too smart, too capable to be easily caught. She'd wait until the moment was right, but that moment might not come for a while. The scant funds Thane had managed to escape with had mostly gone to pay for his freighter trips. His rent on the tiny room already seemed like too much, and he was living on nothing but street food. Thin slices of suspiciously sourced meat cooked on small makeshift grillers outside the shanties, or thin stews thickened with ground grain. Like most cadets, Thane had dreamed of having a few days to sleep late, ignore military discipline, and do whatever he wanted. Yet without the strict framework he'd lived within for the past few years, he found himself rudderless, bewildered, and irritated by more freedom than he knew what to do with. Instead of fulfilling his assigned tasks at a preset schedule, he did nothing. Stubble appeared on his face as the beard suppressant wore off, and buying more didn't seem worth the credits it would cost. Every night he had nightmares about Alderaan, the Death Star, his father, or Sienna in danger. The only thing that separated him from the down-and-outers around him was that Thane didn't spend all his money on ale, though by now he understood why some people did. With each day, he sunk deeper into melancholy. At first, he'd thought it would be easy to find some kind of employment. There was always work for pilots, even unlicensed ones. But now he realized he couldn't do that on Jellucan. The Empire's presence there was too strong for a deserter to wander through the ports asking for a job. No doubt he could indenture himself to one of the less savory freighters that passed through. They never looked into people's backgrounds. But that was only one step removed from selling himself into slavery. Very few things seemed worth trying any longer. It felt as if his entire life were frozen in time, waiting for Sienna to arrive. And if she never came, he didn't know what would become of him, and didn't much care. Thane hit his limit one night about 2 weeks in, as he sprawled on his bed in his sleep tunic and pants. The pale plaster walls of his room were blank, his coverlet a light beige without any pattern. Given its price, the space was surprisingly comfortable, but Thane felt as if it were taunting him with its emptiness. In the Academy's Security Protocols and Interrogation Techniques class, they taught that one of the most effective methods for breaking a person down was simply to make that person stare at a plain wall without ever sleeping. The sleep deprivation and boredom did what pain and threats could not. A prisoner's mind would split itself open, spilling every word hidden inside, just to end the exhausting monotony. Thane had never understood how that worked until now. A commotion outside made him sit upright. It sounded like some of the street merchants were folding up their not-quite-legal wares in a hurry. Thane went to the one small window in his room and pulled back the screen. On the ground a few floors down, he saw an Imperial patrol cruiser that had obviously just pulled up. Then, on the stairs outside, he heard the thump of boots as someone headed his way. "All right, think fast. That's a single-person cruiser. They only sent one guy. You can take one guy out." Not without a weapon, though. Was there anything he could use? But the few items in his room were all either too big to be lifted or too small to do any meaningful damage. Maybe he isn't coming for you. There are dealers in the neighborhood, prostitutes, smugglers, plenty of people to arrest. But then they'd send one of the local paramilitaries, not an Imperial officer. Thane took a deep breath as he ran his hands through his short hair. He'd have to bluff his way through it as best he could. If he denied being Thane Kyrell and acted completely confused, he might throw the guy off for a minute, long enough to grab the officer's blaster. But could he shoot a guy who was just doing his job? Someone who had been his fellow officer just a few days ago? A fist thumped on Thane's door. He mussed his covers as if he'd been asleep, went to the door, and said, as if groggy, "Yeah? Who is it?" The reply, "I'm here on official business." He knew that voice. Instantly, Thane opened the door and saw Sienna standing there in uniform. The sight of her felt like the first breath he'd taken in years. "You made it!" He pulled her inside his room, locked the door behind them, and hugged her tightly. As he breathed in the scent of her skin, he had to marvel at Sienna's brilliance. She hadn't deserted. She'd come here on official business, making sure the Empire would pay her way and delaying all other pursuit. "You're a genius, you know that? I kept waiting, and I thought they might have stopped you. But here you are! Here you are! Thane kissed her then, long and deeply. That damned gray uniform was too stiff against his hands, but they could worry about that later. Sienna kissed him back just as passionately, but when their lips parted, she looked so troubled that he wondered if he'd done something wrong. Or maybe she was worried about their safety. Did the Empire send anyone else? No. They were sure you'd go somewhere besides Jellucan. I knew you'd guess that, so of course you'd come here. Thane grinned. She understood him so well. But Sienna looked even more distressed than before. Thane, what have you done? And then he finally began to realize how far apart they still were. An hour later, Sienna sat with Thane in the cantina below. She'd been afraid they would be overheard, witnessed, maybe even turned in. But Thane had shaken his head. Trust me, he told her. The kind of people who come here, they give Imperial officers a wide berth. Nobody we know is likely to show up.
It's not worth the risk, she'd said.
But Thane's square jaw had set in a way that she knew meant complete determination or just plain stubbornness. If I don't get out of this room, I'm going to lose it. Trust me, we'll be safe. Sure enough, they had the entire corner of the place to themselves. Most of the patrons were newcomers to the planet, not natives, and they crowded at the front near the view screens. She and Thane sat at their small table alone. Merely being in a run-down cantina like that would have unnerved her a few years ago, or even now, if she weren't so wrapped up in trying to stop Thane from making the worst mistake of his life.
You can come back, she repeated. I know you think they'll arrest you, and at any other time they would have, but they badly need qualified officers after what happened.
I don't want to come back, he said, not for the first time. Sienna still refused to believe it.
3 years in the academy, all that work, all that effort, for nothing?
You think I'm happy about this? I'm not. But after what I've seen, what the Empire is doing to the Bodachi, after Alderaan, I can't wear that uniform any longer.
Thane leaned over his glass of ale, head in one hand, like a man with a headache.
I thought we agreed about this.
I thought we agreed that after what happened to so many of our friends aboard the Death Star, we needed to stand together.
The rebels killed thousands of our fellow officers. They killed Grand Moff Tarkin.
Tarkin was nice to us, Thane admitted.
Meeting him changed our lives.
And they killed Jude, Sienna continued.
Do you condone that? I'm not joining the damned rebellion, Sienna. I'm not condoning what happened to the Death Star or what happened to Alderaan. Are you? That's impossible. You'd never think destroying an entire world was the right thing to do.
Miserably, she shook her head.
No, I understand the thinking that led to the attack on Alderaan, but I don't condone it. The thing is, I don't have to.
Sienna leaned closer, looking into Thane's blue eyes and willing him to understand. The Emperor and the Moffs have to see now that destroying Alderaan did no good. It didn't stop the rebellion. If anything, it made the rebels more desperate.
So 2 billion people died in vain, Thane said.
And nearly 1 million aboard the Death Star.
Sienna refused to ignore Jude's death. She still had nightmares of running through the station's corridors, screaming for Jude to get on a shuttlecraft, but never finding her friend. Now the Death Star is gone. Even if the Emperor wanted to do something so drastic again, he couldn't. Besides, the only reason to attack Alderaan was to prevent an even more devastating war. The war has begun anyway. It's too late to save the galaxy from that. All I can do is fight on the side of the law and order and stability.
Thane's laugh was harsh.
Ha! Things fall apart, Sienna. Our parents saw the Republic self-destruct.
The Empire might last another year or another decade, but eventually there's going to be a brand new order and brand new law.
Who will you serve then?
You don't have to be cruel just because I won't. Because I can't desert my post.
She couldn't even be angry with Thane. Her sorrow was too great. Of course, he would rage against Alderaan's destruction, but that didn't have to change everything.
And of course, he hated slavery. She did too. But the Empire had scarcely invented the practice. What counted now was bigger than any individual incident. This was a matter of the deepest principle. We took an oath. We swore ourselves to the Empire's service. We can't break that. Not ever. Thane shook his head. The amber lights in the cantina painted his hair a deeper red and cast shadows on his face that showed how much he was struggling. You're still the girl from the valleys. You won't go against your word, even when you've promised yourself to a leader and a fleet that don't deserve you. And you're still the second waver. You find it easier to break your promises than to keep them. But Sienna was ashamed of the words as soon as she'd spoken them. That was her father's prejudice talking, and her own misery at the thought of losing Thane. He wasn't offended. Instead, he whispered, "It's not easy for me to leave you. It's the hardest thing I've ever done." She turned away, unable to look at him any longer. Thane seemed to think she was reacting out of anger rather than grief, because he spoke more formally when he asked, "Will you report me?" What could she say or do? She was trapped now between her loyalty to Thane and her loyalty to the Empire. As angry as she was with Thane for deserting his commission, she couldn't imagine sending him to jail. How could she ever do something like that to the person she loved? "I don't know." "You don't know? Great." He ran one hand through his hair. "Do you at least know if you're going to report me tonight?" Something within her broke. "Of course not." Thane's voice had turned harsh, cutting. "That won't be breaking your oath? Destroying your precious honor? Sometimes we're loyal to more than one thing. When there's a conflict, we have to choose which loyalty to honor." Sienna had begun trembling. She felt as if she was being torn in two. "I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow, but tonight, right now, I choose my loyalty to you." All the anger melted away from Thane then. His hand cupped the side of her face, and she couldn't hold back any longer. Sienna leaned closer, clutching at his jacket so he wouldn't get away from her. She wanted nothing but for him to stay with her now, tonight, however long they could have. She wanted to believe he wouldn't go away. Thane kissed her again, more deeply than before. Sienna closed her eyes, wound her arms around him, and imagined that she could stop time. This moment would be crystallized and eternal. His chest pressed against hers, the soft rasp of his stubble against her cheeks, the low, rough sound he made as his hand found the curve of her waist. When they pulled apart, breathing hard, she leaned her forehead against his and whispered, "Upstairs." It took Thane another couple of breaths to answer, "Are you sure?" In that moment, she felt as if she could be sure of nothing. Thane, one of the constants in her life, her pole star, was leaving forever. The world had turned upside down, and she suspected it could never be fully right again. But that was why she was determined to take everything she could have. To live completely in this moment, this night with Thane. To stop time. "Yes," she whispered against his mouth. "Yes." Thane couldn't sleep. It was the dead of night and he was worn out, but it didn't matter. All he could do was look at Sienna. She drowsed against his shoulder, not entirely asleep or awake. Her tightly curled hair, set free, spread around her head on the pillow like a dark halo. Her full lips were swollen from their kisses. And even though he'd spent the better part of the last 3 hours learning absolutely every detail of her body, it still exhilarated him to see her lying next to him, wearing nothing but a corner of the sheet. As he lay beside her, Thane, for the first time, asked himself if he could do what Sienna asked. Could he return to base, admit to a moment of weakness, and go back into service? Probably Sienna was right about the current crisis absolving many sins. What would have earned him months in the brig a year ago was now likely to be no more than a smudge on his record. If he returned right now, he could stay with Sienna. But he couldn't go back. Not after what he'd seen. He'd spent his entire childhood suffering under the cruelty of one hypocrite. He refused to inflict suffering on behalf of another, even if that person was the Emperor. For Sienna, it was different. Her loyalty, once given, was absolute. The Empire didn't deserve her, yet it had her in its grasp forever. She didn't remain a part of the Emperor's machine because she was ambitious or corrupt. No, the Empire had found a way to use her honor against her. The strength of her character was the exact reason why she would remain in the service of evil. It was as if she were already gone forever. Even as he felt her soft breath against his shoulder, Thane hugged her tighter, burrowing his face into the curve of her neck. Sienna sighed softly as she came closer to consciousness. Her hand slipped under his waist to deepen their embrace. "You awake?" he murmured.
"Mm-hmm."
Then she stirred again and answered more believably.
"I am now."
"I love you." He couldn't believe he'd never said it before. It was like stating that the sky was overhead. So obvious, so fundamentally true, that verbalizing it ought to be unnecessary. She lifted his face to his.
"I love you too. Always have. One way or another."
"I love you in every way."
"Yes,"
Sienna smiled, but the expression was so sad that it hurt Thane. A literal ache in the center of his chest.
"In every way."
"If I begged you to stay with me, it wouldn't make any difference, would it?" She shook her head. "If I begged you to get on the next transport back to Coruscant, you wouldn't, would you?" He didn't have to say anything. They both knew the answer. "So, that's the end." The words came out more harshly than Thane had intended, but he trusted Sienna to understand his anger wasn't aimed at her. "The Empire takes us from each other forever."
"If it weren't for the Empire, we would have never come together in the first place. Think about it. Would you have ever made friends with a girl from the valleys any other way?"
Thane had been so small when Jellucan was annexed by the Empire that his earlier memories were jumbled and unsure. In some ways, it felt like his life had truly begun that day, with his dream of flying for the Empire, and with Sienna. "I guess not." Sienna sat up as if she was going to get out of bed, but Thane pulled her back. She wouldn't look him in the face any longer.
"I should go."
"Stay."
"If I stay, leaving will only be harder."
"Would leaving now be any easier, really?"
"No."
Finally, Sienna met his eyes.
"Thane, you have to get off Jellucan. Within the week. Because at the end of 1 week, I'm going to report you."
Thane felt it like a stab wound between the ribs. "What happened to choosing which loyalty to honor?"
"I chose you tonight.
I wish I could always choose you. But if I covered for you forever, my oath of loyalty to the Empire would be worthless. This is the only time. Do you understand?" By now her voice had begun to shake.
"This is the first time and the last."
Somehow, deep inside, Thane had been convinced he would see Sienna again. He wanted to believe they could find each other no matter what. But now he realized that was foolish, the dream of a child.
"Do you understand?" Sienna repeated.
"Yes." The word was bitter. "So you'd throw me in a military prison, even after this?" Thane gestured at the rumpled bed, their discarded clothes on the floor. Her insignia plaque shone slightly in the dim light.
"I gave you fair warning just now. Besides, you have to get on the move sooner or later. How much time have you wasted here?"
"Wasted? I was waiting for you." He hadn't known he could be so angry at someone and still love her. "I guess that was wasted time after all." Sienna winced, but she kept on. "You can't get a job on Jellucan, catch the next freighter to an independent world, and don't even think about indenturing yourself, okay? Find yourself some work somewhere else in the Outer Rim, where they'll never look for you. I don't need your advice."
"You need someone's advice.
Otherwise, you're just going to stay here in Valencia, moping and losing your way. That stung. But Thane began to realize she wasn't completely wrong. Okay, fine. I'll ship out of here soon. Within the week. Because after 1 week, she would report him. The woman he loved would report him to the Empire.
Yeah, he said flatly. Within the week.
She took a deep breath. So, there's nothing more to say. But Sienna made no move to leave. Instead, she brushed her palm against her cheek. Her thumb traced the line of her cheekbone. He ought to tell her to get out. To tell her he was done sharing his bed with someone who cared more about the Empire than she did about him. Cruel words like the ones his father and Dalvin used came into his mind fully formed, as if the wickedness he'd known from them had been buried deep inside, waiting to hatch. I've already had everything I want from you. Gave it up easy, didn't you? But he said none of that. Instead, he asked himself what he'd regret more, leaving her now or going to bed with her again. Either way, it was going to hurt. Their gazes met, and when she leaned closer, he cupped his hand around the back of her head to bring her in for a kiss. The time Thane had left with Sienna could be measured in mere hours. They wouldn't waste it. Ranadam scowled down at her report on his screen.
You're quite sure of this, Lieutenant Commander Rhee?
As certain as anyone can be without finding a body. And in the crevasses, it's difficult for even scanner droids to search. The sky burial takes the dead within days, sir.
Sky burial?
Sienna wished she could have taken back those words. Her thoughts were too much on Jellucan and all she had left behind there. On Jellucan, sir, we put our dead in open cairns at high altitude. Birds devour the body, taking both the flesh and the soul of the deceased into the sky with them forever.
Barbaric,
Ranadam said with a sniff. She managed not to flinch.
But I suppose the same thing would happen with an accident, or suicide, as it seems we have here.
Sienna nodded. Lieutenant Kyrell was overcome with grief after the loss of so many fellow officers and friends aboard the Death Star. Based on my interviews on Jellucan, I believe that he originally deserted and returned to his home world in an effort to restore his will to live. But it didn't work. He leapt from one of the higher cliffs in our home province, leaving his ridge crawler behind, still running. She shouldn't have added that. Lies were best kept simple, or so Sienna had been given to understand. But she had lied so little in her life. The dishonesty tasted foul in her mouth. When she'd parted from Thane, Sienna had fully intended to live up to her word and report his desertion after 1 week. A week was long enough for him to get his act together, escape to some obscure world, and vanish from her life forever. That also gave her time to go home to her parents, who had been happy and surprised to see her, and no doubt even more surprised when she burst into tears at the door. Although Sienna had pulled herself together well enough, and had said not one word about Thane to her family, she knew they sensed that this was no routine visit. Mama had sat up with her late into the night, asking no intrusive questions, simply braiding Sienna's hair the way she'd done when Sienna was a little girl. Her mother's touch had been comforting, but nothing could assuage Sienna's misery at the thought of turning Thane in. In the end, she hadn't been able to do it. If the Empire made any effort to track him down, however minimal, it was possible they would find Thane and bring him back to stand trial. So she chose her loyalty to him once again and protected him with the best lie she could create.
Very well.
Ranadam signed off on her report without even fully reading it. Had Thane deserted at any less desperate time for the Imperial fleet, Sienna realized, her story would have been scrutinized much more closely. Now all Ranadam wanted to do was cross a task off his list.
You handled this well, Lieutenant Commander Rhee.
The praise felt like stones on her back, growing heavier throughout the day. Sienna burned with shame to have been commended by a superior officer for violating her oath of loyalty. Never again, she promised herself. From that day on, her service to the Empire would be more than her duty. It would be her atonement for loving even one person in the galaxy more than her honor. Chapter 13. 7 months after the Battle of Yavin. Thane turned down the blue-white flame of the welding torch, lifted his goggles, and frowned at the snarl of metal he was attempting to fix. The independent freighter Moa had been old before he was born, but kept going thanks to a series of makeshift upgrades installed over the decades. Right then, he was trying to make a 60-year-old power cell work inside a 20-year-old processor, with limited success. Cursing under his breath, he shut off the torch and walked through the Moa's corridors until he reached the bridge. It wasn't the dark, angular kind of space Thane had learned to expect on Imperial vessels, but a small, brightly lit chamber where console panels glowed in 5 different colors, each testifying to a completely different origin. Everything on the ship had been pieced together from parts to suit the very particular needs of the Moa, or more precisely, the ship everyone on board usually called the Moa. That was only an acronym for its full name, Mighty Oak Apocalypse, a title that apparently sounded a lot more badass to Wookiees, such as their captain. "I'm still only getting 60% charge," Thane reported to Lagara. "When we dock at Zidoene, we've got to pick up a better power cell." Lagara growled, wanting to know where exactly they would get the credits for a new power cell. "I know we're broke." Technically, Thane was only a hired co-pilot and navigator, but Lagara treated her crew members with respect, like members of a team. He could bring up objections, he could say "we." "But it doesn't have to be a new power cell, just one that's not quite as old." Lagara asked whether Thane thought all old things should be thrown out. That was a joke at her own expense. She was elderly even by the standards of the long-lived Wookiees, her fur by then almost entirely white. Thane leaned against the wall and smiled. "Most things don't age as well as you do, Lagara." That earned him a dismissive wave of her hand. She agreed to give him a budget to search for a newer battery for the aft sensor array, but warned him with a growl that Zidoene might not be the cheapest place to pick one up. "I know, but we're not going to do much better in this area of space. We'd find something less expensive in the Outer Rim." Being within the inner rim of the Empire made Thane uneasy. He'd signed on to the Moa precisely because Lagara and her crew mostly stuck to the Outer Rim, or the expansion region. Working for her seemed like a good way to hide out for a while. Lagara transported only legal cargo, but she operated on the fringes, where Imperial oversight was rarely an issue. Although Thane hadn't outright told Lagara that he was an Imperial deserter, he could tell she'd guessed right away, and that she didn't care. Even though her dark blue eyes had gone slightly milky with age, her vision and mind were still sharp. Lagara hired crew members who were not only competent, but also easy to get along with, and not driven to make money by any means possible. The jobs they took were determined more by Logara's character than by any quest for riches. A lucrative run of luxury goods might be followed by a zero-sum haul of emergency generators to a troubled outpost. She said she needed people around her who could be trusted. Privately, Thane believed she was too trusting, but it was her ship and her business. She'd run a freighter for a couple of centuries without his help, so he figured she could size people up well enough. As he'd learned to understand Shri Wook better, he'd realized how intelligent his captain was. And when Lagara really took a crew member under her wing, as she had Thane, she could be affectionate to the point of acting maternal. It was a little ridiculous, but he didn't mind. At least he worked for someone he could respect. Always perceptive, Lagara had obviously picked up on his unease. She reminded him briskly that Zidoene was a jungle planet with only a handful of large cities, and not an active trading center. "Yeah, I know," Thane admitted. "We'll be fine." But he still felt uneasy, and probably looked it, too. The only other crew member on the bridge at the moment was their astromech droid, a JJH-2 model in purple and black. Thane was grateful that nobody else would see his discomfort at the thought of landing on a world with an Imperial presence. Logara had to remain the only one who really understood what was going on. Concerned, she leaned forward to peer at Thane, squinting her blue eyes, then said he'd become too thin and asked if he was getting enough food. He managed not to roll his eyes. "Yes, I'm eating." But Logara knew it could be difficult, finding rations that would provide adequate nutrition for all the different species aboard. "I promise, I'm fine. Don't worry, all right?" Thane turned to go. As the bridge door slid open again, Logara whined on a low, scolding note. He laughed in exasperation as he walked out. "My coat is plenty shiny." As he walked down the corridor, he thought, "I just called my hair my coat. Before too long, I had to spend some more time with other humans again." Even then, he didn't consider returning to Jellocan. He had no reason. Every once in a while, he'd watch New Hollows from home, but never out of a sense of nostalgia, only to make himself even happier he'd never have to go back. His family was no doubt glad to be rid of him, and Sienna, he had to close his eyes for a moment when he thought of her. She wouldn't be there either. Not given the intensifying war between the Empire and the Rebel Alliance. He doubted Sienna had gotten more than 3 days leave in a row since they'd said goodbye. If Thane ever went back to Jellocan, he would imagine Sienna as a little girl in any of the small flyers darting through the skies. The mountain trails would remind him of how they had explored together as children and had found the cave that became the fortress. And Valentia would never be only a city to him. It would always be the place where they'd come together for one night, and where they had parted forever. "It's been a while now," he told himself. "You ought to be over it." That was a lie. You didn't get over losing your first love, your best friend. But Thane had thought it wouldn't always hurt as badly as it had that last terrible morning in Valentia. So far, he had been wrong. Zidane was a cold world, not one of the ones trapped in perpetual winter, but chilly enough that Thane and his crewmates stepped out into a hard frost. The spaceport stood at the edge of the city, so in the distance he could see tall, deciduous trees, all bare of their leaves. His breath made clouds in the air. "Times like this, it's good to have fur," said Brill, their Tarsan engineer, who had dyed her long-haired pelt shocking pink. "Don't know how you humans do it." "Sometimes I wonder myself." Thane turned up the collar of his coat. "Let's just get this job done, okay?" That was met with a thumping purr of agreement from Methwat Tan, the Athorian maintenance officer. His enormous curved head and neck were wrapped in a scarf specifically knitted for him by Logara, but he too was shivering. Their job on Zidane was simple enough, delivery of several constructor droids. Thane helped Methwat and Brill unload, then hurried deeper into the spaceport to locate a vendor of secondhand parts. Usually you could find one or two hanging around. After a few minutes without any luck, he finally dared to ask someone, who told him the nearest place was 10 minutes' walk away. He frowned, checked his chrono, and decided to go for it. Better to run a little late and get chewed out for it than to work with that damned antiquated power cell any longer. So he cut through the town, going as quickly as he could until he came to a crowded town square and stopped. Nobody was walking or even moving, and then he saw why.
"You're under arrest,"
a stormtrooper captain said in a bored voice as at least a dozen of his men stood around, using their blasters to keep everyone back from the scene as people were dragged out of a nearby house. A family, Thane realized with a jolt. The daughter couldn't have been more than 13, and she wept as a stormtrooper pulled her after him so fast she could barely walk. His fist was clenched in her hair.
"Please," the mother said, on her knees in front of the captain. "Please, we'll pay the fines. You can sell our house, all our possessions."
The stormtrooper captain sounded bored.
"Repeated violations of the prohibition against independent publications are punished with imprisonment without term."
Another stormtrooper brought out an even younger girl, perhaps only 5, small enough to be tucked under his arm. This girl didn't cry. She was too terrified for that. Instead, her wide eyes stared into the crowd, as if looking for someone to help them. Nobody made a move, The stormtrooper's blaster saw to that.
Less than a year ago, I stood by while slaves were beaten, Thane realized. Once again, he remembered prowling the sky in his TIE fighter. Also, the people of Cara Doi would be afraid. The mother continued begging.
Not the children. My husband and I. We did this. The children are innocent. Why should they...
Her words choked off as the captain smashed the butt of his rifle into her face. She fell to the ground, crying as another stormtrooper bent down to cuff her.
Do something!
But Thane was powerless. He couldn't act against that many armed men. He couldn't even speak up. By deserting the Imperial Starfleet, he had put himself in a position where he could never draw attention to himself or step out of line again. The invisible cage around him was of his own making. Sickened, he turned away and headed back to the spaceport. As he walked toward the Moa, Brill caught sight of him.
Hey, where's that new power cell?
Thane snapped.
They didn't have anything in our price range, okay?
Behind him, he could hear her mutter. Sorry I asked. That wasn't how you made friends with your new shipmates, but Thane didn't want to make friends. He wanted to lock himself in his bunk, turn off the lights, and try to forget everything he'd seen or been. Sienna stared at the scene before her on the planet Ivarujar and thought that this could only be hell. In the distance, the volcano continued to spew ash into the air, so far up that no one on this world would be able to see the sky for years. Lava glowed orange and ominous on the horizon. Already the capital city had been completely overrun. When Sienna had looked through her quadnoculars, she could see yet more buildings blackened as they crumbled to ash from the heat alone. As the closest ship in the sector, the Devastator had dispatched several troop transports to evacuate the Imperial garrisons on Ivarujar. Their own ships had been badly damaged in the original eruption, so they were trapped, and if she didn't reach them soon, doomed. Sienna had been put in charge of the transport flying closest to the volcano itself. Hazardous duty, but she found herself energized by the experience. It wasn't that she didn't like working on the bridge of a Star Destroyer, but she'd been overdue to get her boots on the ground.
Lieutenant Commander Rhee, we have visual, said the stormtrooper pilot.
She turned back from the transport window to see the screen image of stormtroopers atop a building. They stood in formation, rigid and motionless as they awaited rescue, though by then the heat had to have been unbearable.
Good work, she said. Bring us in.
The pilot hesitated, then double-checked his instruments. Sienna understood why he was uncertain. The intense heat was starting fires, creating backdrafts, and whipping up winds that could destabilize a larger craft than their transport. You got strange winds up in the mountains sometimes.
Here, I'll take the helm.
Sienna motioned him out of the chair.
Ma'am, I'm capable of the flight.
I know you are, but you have the strength to carry any injured men onto the craft, and I don't.
Well, not more than one or two, she thought.
Assured he wouldn't be reported for cowardice, the pilot joined the other stormtroopers in the back. Sienna took the transport in low, through urban canyons where lava ran over what had recently been streets. The hellish red light from below contrasted with the black sky. Although it was a bumpy ride, she could stabilize them well enough.
Clunky thing,
she thought, wishing briefly for a ship with some agility to it. Still, the transport could endure the heat, and nothing else mattered. She set the transport down on the roof of the garrison building, and as soon as they'd opened the doors, the troops began crowding in. Their armor had gone gray from volcanic ash, and several of them coughed and stumbled. Within another half hour or so, they would have passed out or died. Sienna remembered them standing in formation, holding true to discipline to the last, and felt such pride her heart could have burst.
All right,
she said, and she was about to utter the words, moving out, when she saw another building farther away. People had huddled on that roof, too. Ivarujarian citizens who must have failed to make it to the civilian transports in time. Or maybe there hadn't been enough room for everyone.
Lieutenant Commander?
The pilot had returned to the cockpit.
Are we ready for takeoff?
Yes, she said.
We're going to make one stop before returning to the Devastator.
Stop?
No orders had told her she could rescue civilians, but no orders had told her she couldn't.
Make as much room back there as you can. We're picking up more passengers.
When Sienna took off again, she could feel the unsteadiness of the air currents around her. Biting her lower lip, she took the transport higher up so they'd have to dive into the worst of it only at the very end. The volcano rumbled again so loudly that the sound vibrated through the entire ship. They'd been given warnings about a potential secondary eruption, which seemed as if it could happen at any minute.
You don't have the right to risk the lives you're responsible for to save those you aren't, she thought,
her old academy training kicking in. After a moment, though, Sienna shook it off. Lives were lives, and besides, she could do this. Once again, she alighted on the corner of a building, and then she left the cockpit to help civilians on board. They were coughing even harder than the stormtroopers, since they hadn't been wearing helmets with ventilation masks. A few of them were only semi-conscious. Sienna held her arms out for a small child, lifted him into the ship, then put her hand out to help the father in too. Around her, the stormtroopers did the same, following their commanding officer's lead as always. By the time the last person had been pulled on board, the ship was filled to capacity and then some. Sienna had to push her way back through to the cockpit, where the pilot was no longer even attempting to fly. He stood aside, saying,
At this weight, I don't know if we can...
We can and we will, Sienna said, with more confidence than she felt. The transport was capable of carrying that much weight, but its maneuverability would be compromised, a serious risk when dealing with superheated gale-force winds. She took the engines to full power and soared into the air. At first, the transport rocked beneath her, so violently that she nearly fell from her chair. She could hear the rescued Ivarajarians crying out in fear from the hold. By then, buildings were flaring into flame like struck matches. In another moment, it would become a true firestorm, and her ship could be caught in the middle of it. Sienna pointed the nose straight up. They were ascending more slowly than they should, but they were moving. On the horizon, she saw flames whip up higher, then begin to swirl in a cyclonic current. If the transport got caught in one of those, they were dead. But she remained steady, fighting the terrible winds every centimeter of the way, until at last they were out of danger. Sienna breathed out with relief, and from the back of the transport, she heard cheers. If she couldn't resist a smile, who could blame her? The answer turned out to be Captain Ronadam.
You were tasked with retrieving the soldiers in that garrison, he said, pacing the length of his office while she stood at attention, still in her soot-grimed uniform. Not with a civilian rescue.
My orders did not forbid me from doing so, sir.
Ronadam's eyes narrowed.
Looking for loopholes, Ree. A dangerous trait.
No, sir. I mean, I reacted instinctively and saw no obstacle to doing so.
You reacted instinctively, he sneered. In other words, you failed to clear your plans through your superior officers.
We had no time, she wanted to protest, but she knew better. I'm sorry, sir. I should have cleared my mission before undertaking it. I won't make that mistake again.
See that you don't.
Ronadam stared her up and down before adding stiffly,
You have no other demerits on your record, so your punishment will be lenient, only 5 weeks of double-duty shifts. Next time, however, we will not be so merciful.
There won't be a next time, sir.
And 5 weeks of extra duty was a small price for 40 lives. As she walked out of his office, Sienna breathed out in relief. At first, she'd been angry that they'd planned to reprimand her for saving lives. But now she understood that they were displeased only because she'd subverted the chain of command. It wasn't as if she had actually done something wrong, rescuing those people. The Empire would never object to that. Besides, that was some of the best flying she'd done in her life. If only she could talk to Thane about it. In Sienna's mind, she could see his face as she told him about the cyclonic fire. He would have been so jealous he didn't get to fly in that himself. Even the things she was proudest of felt hollow without Thane to tell them to. Chapter 14 18 months after the Battle of Yavin. The MOA's cargo holds were filled with medical supplies for the far southern peninsula of Ulan's single megacontinent. A month before, a massive earthquake had struck, devastating virtually every structure over a vast radius. However, the Empire had sent no medical aid. An economically unimportant planet didn't merit such attention. A few wealthier Ulanists who lived on other worlds had offered what they had. The medical supplies the freighter carried were only a fraction of what was needed, but they would help. Thane strongly suspected Logara had agreed to do the run for free. As they came in through the very highest levels of the atmosphere, Thane checked the climatological sensors and whistled.
Not good.
Logara wanted to know what they were in for.
We're looking at a massive storm, a mega hurricane, covering a good quarter of the land area.
JJH2 confirmed this, beeping an alarm. Methwat made a vibrato sound of dismay.
Like these people haven't got enough trouble already,
Brill said, shaking her furry pink head. Thane added,
and now we've got trouble too.
Normally storms weren't an issue for spacecraft. Anything that could take the ravages of space could handle a little rain and lightning. However, a cargo ship as overladen as the MOA currently was could become unwieldy in the atmosphere, and winds this extreme would have the power to overwhelm their stabilizers. Only for a few minutes, but that was more than long enough to plow a ship into the dirt. They could simply have headed to the nearest safe port. In this case, though, that meant being thousands of kilometers away from the disaster. The medical supplies were probably needed now more than ever. So when Logara asked Thane if he could land in those conditions, he said,
"Damn right I can!"
Methwat turned toward Thane with a worried look on his face. He was too polite to question anyone outright, but it was clear he didn't like the look of this.
"Trust me," Thane said.
With that, he strapped into his chair and took the ship in. The blackness of space brightened into sky. Still blue, but not for much longer. Beneath them swirled the storm, the ominous spiral cloud sprawled out like the tentacles of some vast ocean creature. As the winds began buffeting the ship, the hull shuddered around them. Logara growled for all crew members to brace themselves. JJH2 swiftly fed Thane Station all the atmospheric data it could handle. Brill muttered, "Hope you know what you're doing, Kyrell."
"That makes two of us."
He dived into the eye of the storm, the calm patch at the center of any cyclone. As the broad white wings of the MOA stretched over the churning sea, the viewscreen displayed the surreal image. Sunlight on the water as they sped toward black clouds and sheets of rain so thick they blinded Thane to the world beyond. The sensors would tell him all he needed to know. He aligned the ship, decreased speed, and took them so low they could make out the white caps on the restless waves, and then the debris strewn on the rocky shore below. The entire ship tilted hard, as if it had been punched by a giant fist.
Damn!
The wind shear was even worse than Thane had thought.
"Come on,"
he whispered as he steered them into the angle where that current would work for them instead of sinking them.
"We can do this! Are you talking to the ship or to me?"
Brill said. Instead of answering, Thane asked,
"Did you lock the system onto the hangar coordinates?"
Brill's pink hair stood on end.
"You want to take this in on AutoNav?"
From her captain's chair, Logara growled her disbelief, and JJH2 whistled the high note of droid panic.
"Not just AutoNav!"
By then, the MOA was shuddering so strongly that Thane had to shout to be heard above the rattling and groaning of the hull.
"This boat's so old, we've cribbed its system with dozens of different spacecraft, so turning on the AutoNav doesn't deactivate the manual navigation. We're going to use them both at the same time."
Brill's fingers tapped on the controls, doing what Thane asked.
"You realize if you can't sync your movements with the AutoNav, you'll rip us in two." "I've got it."
Thane felt the AutoNav kick in. It was a bit like having another pilot try to wrench the controls away from him. But he'd spent most of his childhood learning how to fly with a partner. You didn't fight for control. You built it together. The AutoNav remained locked on its target, oblivious to severe wind conditions. That made it Thane's job to tilt and steer the ship in ways that would fight that wind while they stayed the course. At one point, the disconnect between the two jerked the ship hard, shaking everyone violently enough that even mild-mannered Methwat yelped. but Thane got them back in sync within a few moments. When the hangar appeared on the horizon, Thane finally felt like he could breathe again. Dampers, slow thrust, hover down, and the MOA settled safely onto the ground. As Brill and Methwat began to applaud, Thane folded his arms behind his head like he hadn't been worried at all.
"That's right," he said. "I'm good."
"You're lucky," Brill insisted, but with a huge grin.
"All right, I'm lucky. Whatever works."
"You wouldn't have believed it if you'd been there," he imagined saying to Sienna. "Then again, if you'd been there, you would have insisted on taking the controls instead of me, and probably would have brought us in for an even smoother landing." Thane kept storing up anecdotes to tell her someday, even though he knew that day would never come. He tried to stop, but he couldn't help it. Logara told Thane she was very, very proud of him and wrapped her huge, furry arms around him in a hug. Then she showed the highest form of praise and affection for a Wookiee. She started grooming him. Thane sighed as she got to work on his hair in earnest. This wasn't how they did things in the Empire. The next day, the storm had moved along far enough that they could start distributing their supplies. To Thane's surprise, another group of pilots had landed a few days before with a substantial haul of medical gear and emergency rations. So they wound up working side by side.
"You brought that ship in yesterday?" said their leader, a black-haired man a few years older than Thane. "That was a nice piece of flying."
"Thanks.
You do a lot of hauls like this? To worlds in trouble?"
"Sometimes. Logara gets the credit for that," Thane said as the two of them unloaded crates.
"But I like that she does it." "Less money in it for you."
"Never cared much about money."
"What other runs have you been on?"
Thane hesitated before answering. If he was suspected of disloyalty to the Empire, he could be reported. But there was no way to talk honestly about his experiences of the last several months without making his feelings clear. He'd known the Empire was rotten, but he hadn't realized how deep the rot went. The plight of the Bodachi had disturbed him deeply, and yet now he knew they were only one of hundreds of entire species the Empire had subjugated for labor. He'd flown the mighty oak to world mind so savagely that new seas had been carved into what were once cities and farmlands. He'd looked down at cities strafed to rubble and ash by Imperial laser cannons as punishment for even mild defiance.
"Zidoine," Thane said, "and Dinwa Prime, and Arieli. More recently, Ivira 10.
He spoke evenly, but was aware what he'd said was in effect a list of the Empire's war crimes. The other man met his eyes evenly.
"Then you've seen a lot."
"Yeah.
When we get done here, you and I should have a chat. I've been to several of those worlds. Good to hear what other people believe should be done."
"Is he thinking about reporting me?" Thane knew it was possible, but his gut told him no. Slowly, he nodded.
"Sure. We'll talk. I'm Thane Kyrell, by the way."
The black-haired man smiled and held out his hand to shake.
"Wedge Antilles."
They wound up sharing a couple of ration trays just inside the hangar doors. The worst of the hurricane had passed through by that time. Heavy, silvery sheets of rain still fell, but the winds had died down until the palms and jungle trees merely swayed. The sound of rustling leaves and raindrops on the metal roof remained loud enough to drown out their conversation if anyone attempted to listen.
"You showed courage," Wedge said. "Leaving like that."
Thane shrugged.
"I laundered my credits and sneaked away. Not the bravest thing anyone's ever done.
You defied the Empire alone. You gave up the life and career you'd built rather than violate your principles. I'd call that brave."
"Stop trying to get on my good side and say what you're trying to say."
This was met with a sharp look. Apparently Wedge Antilles wasn't used to not being taken at his word. Maybe Thane was being unfair, but so what? He had to be careful about whom he chose to trust. Logara and the rest of the MOA crew had earned that. Sienna would always have his loyalty to some degree, even if he never saw her again. But this guy? He needed to come out with it already. Evenly, Wedge said, "We could use pilots like you in the Rebel Alliance."
"The Rebels? Here?" Thane wouldn't have dreamed they'd dare show themselves, only to help a planet in distress. But he knew Wedge was telling the truth.
No, sorry.
You hate the Empire. After what you've seen, you couldn't help it.
True, Thane admitted. But I don't care much for your rebellion, either.
We're fighting to free the galaxy.